First, you heat the water, then add the soap. Boil dirty clothes for 10 minutes, scrub, rinse, wring, and hang them up to dry. With a program like that, it's no wonder that the automatic washing machine was revolutionary. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. By 1921, Maytag Corporation had already sold a lot of washing machines, but sales had slowed and the outlook for the company was bleak. Then resident inventor Howard Snyder came up with a new product that changed everything. I'll talk with Tom Hoover about the story he tells in How We Made the Gyrofoam. Then later in the hour, what we've learned from NASA's Pluto flyby. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. NASA has learned a great deal about the dwarf planet Pluto this week. Later this hour, we'll dig into some of what we've learned so far and what we've seen this week from outer space. But first, the name Maytag is well known, but the name Howard Snyder is not, even though he was almost as responsible for the success of the Maytag Corporation as Frederick L. Maytag, the company founder himself. Tom Hoover is a retired school administrator and an amateur historian who lives in Newton, and he tells Howard Snyder's story in the new book, How We Made the Gyrofoam, the story of two Midwestern farm boys who changed wash day Mondays forever. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Charity. It's great to be with you this morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I think we should go back. We should start with sort of the roots of the Maytag company, which was not started as a washing machine company at all. But tell us how it was started.
That's correct. The Maytag company actually began as a farm implement manufacturing company in 1893. It was known as the Parsons Band Cutter Self-Feeder Company. And a local inventor in Newton, G.W. Parsons, spent 14 years tinkering with an idea to invent a self-feeder attachment to a threshing machine. He was motivated by the fact that his brother had lost an arm in a threshing accident. And so he set about to design a machine that would make threshing grain much safer for farmhands. And it was often said back then you could spot a thresherman because he was often missing fingers, he might have had an arm missing, or his arm was damaged in some way.
Very dangerous work.
Very dangerous work. So one day in 1893, Mr. Parsons invited F.L. Maytag, Frederick L. Maytag, and two of Maytag's brothers-in-law, W.C. and A.H. Bergman, to join him in a farm field so he could demonstrate this, his new invention, which he did. And Maytag was so taken by this opportunity that he immediately pledged an investment of money to help get this company started. So the four of them created the Parsons Band Cutter Self-Feeder Company in 1893, and that was the beginnings of in a sense, the Maytag company that would come along then in 1909.
So as they were selling this, these implements that mm-hmm. were used to make threshing safer,
right.
They were getting reports back from the field saying this thing breaks down, right?
Yes, that's exactly what was happening. And F.L. and Parsons and the Bergmans literally were going out into the fields at night trying to repair these machines so that they would be operational the next day because the farmers were refusing to pay for them. The problem that the four partners ran into initially is they did not actually manufacture the machines. They outsourced it to a local manufacturing company in Newton, and they didn't thoroughly test them. They rushed them to the marketplace, and yes, they were breaking down quite frequently. And that actually was a problem throughout the entire industry. There were many other companies at this time marketing this same product, this same self-feeder attachment, and they were very unreliable. The problem was trying to come up with a governor that would, in effect, shut down the machine before it would clog. And nobody had come up with the answer for that. So,
and I think that this next part of the story really does show some genius on F.L. Maytag's part, because he noticed, and maybe others at the company too, but noticed that they weren't getting reports of failures from one small region in Minnesota, right?
That's correct. They were not hearing reports from farmers in the Austin, Minnesota area.
And I've got to say, for a lot of people, I would think that you would think, oh, well, no news is good news. We'll just keep trying to make everything else work.
Right.
But Maytag thought, wait a minute, I want to know what's going on there.
That's right. And so he embarks, in essence, on a fact-finding trip up to Austin, Minnesota. And the Parsons Company had sold a car load of self-feeder attachments in 1896 to farmers in that area. A carload was 50 machines, and no complaints. So off he goes to Austin, Minnesota. He begins to ask around, and that's when he meets Howard Schneider. And Howard was a 27-year-old farmhand. He was in charge of his father's threshing team. His father, Ira, had purchased one of the first steam-powered threshing machines in Maurer County, and Howard was in charge of along with two of his brothers, in charge of this threshing machine. And then Howard was also working in an implement dealership in this little town of Rose Creek, owned by his father-in-law. And lo and behold, Snyder and Maytag meet, possibly out in a farm field somewhere, and they immediately hit it off. And Maytag recognized quite quickly that this was a man who he was a mechanical genius. He loved to take machines apart. He loved tinkering with them, and quickly realized that Snyder's motivation was to someday become an inventor. And so the two of them immediately clicked, as it were.
Well, and Maytag offered him a job on the spot, and Snyder turned him down.
He did, much to the surprise of Snyder's friends. It was like, what are you doing here? This is your benefactor. This is the person that you've been waiting for that can help you become that inventor that you're hoping to be. Snyder had invented a threshing machine of his own, and he was in the process of trying to patent it, and was unable. He knew that he would never be able to manufacture this machine because he didn't have the capital. So he sold the patent rights of that machine to a company in Beloit, Wisconsin. And when he turned Maytag down, his friends, they were surprised. And what I believe was happening at that time was that Howard and his wife Letty were deeply grieving over the loss of their son, Scott, who died at the age of two. In the fall of 1896, there was a severe diphtheria epidemic in the Austin, Minnesota area. Scott had died, and I think Howard and Letty decided they didn't want to leave family and friends at that time and move to a strange town where literally the only person they knew there was F.L. Maytag. So Maytag was persistent, however. He offered him a job as a field expert. And for the next 2 years, Snyder traveled around the upper Midwest in Minnesota and the Dakotas, selling self-feeder attachments and repairing those machines as he traveled about. And then in 1898, an opportunity a bit of a crisis arose that caused Maytag to convince Snyder to move to Newton, and he did in 1898.
And what was that crisis?
G.W. Parsons decided to leave the company, and he had just received a patent for a new governor. And he wanted to go off and start a new company to manufacture this governor there in Newton. And so he sold his quarter interest in the company to the other three partners, and off he went. And I'm sure Frederick Maytag is thinking, oh, my gosh, there goes the intellectual property of this company walking out the door, and I need to bring somebody in here who knows as much about threshing machines as G.W. Parsons. And, of course, that person was Howard Snyder. So he convinces Snyder to move to Newton. He charges him with the responsibility of inventing a new governor. And at the same time, he indicated to him the experimental lab will be your playground. You can invent to your heart's content, but I need to have you come up with a new governor. So he began working on a governor. that became known, ironically, as the success governor.
But it was not.
It was not. It turned out to be an abysmal failure, and Maytag at one point commented that it almost broke the company.
Well, that's interesting because Maytag was a businessman who ran pretty close to the edge a lot of the time. I mean, mm-hmm. this was an enormously successful company, but it nearly failed many times.
Right. Yep. Frederick L. Maytag was he was a charismatic individual. He was a daring entrepreneur. He really, I think, fit the mold of many entrepreneurs at the turn of the 20th century that were they were willing to risk it all on a new idea. And yes, he went down the road several times with questionable ventures that were quite costly. What I found intriguing to me was the fact that Maytag would often comment that his success was due to what he referred to as my boys, the people working under him. And he was always willing and ready to give credit to everyone else for his success. And that was the case with Snyder, because think what would have happened if Maytag would have fired Howard Snyder over the failure of this success governor. He didn't. He stuck with him, and of course, as they say, the rest is history in terms of the rise of the Maytag company to becoming the premier washing machine manufacturer by the mid-1920s.
Well, and Snyder continued to work. He came up with another governor that worked better.
Yes.
He filed a lot of patents, invented a lot of tools for farm implements. What led him toward washing machines?
I believe it was actually F.L. Maytag's son, Elmer Maytag. Elmer joined the company around 1905, and he was kind of the bean counter of the company. He was the one that paid attention to profit and loss statements and that sort of thing. And, you know, in the farm implement industry, in the off season, it's a slow time. There's not a demand for plows or for corn husking machines and that sort of thing, or for band cutter self feeder attachments. So as a way to keep the guys on the factory floor working in the off season, Elmer suggested to his father that they get into the washing machine business. And there were actually several other very profitable washing machine companies in town at that time. And Elmer decided we need to get into that game as well. So he encouraged Snyder to begin tinkering with a washing machine. And back in 1907, washing machines were literally nothing more than mechanical washboards.
And we'll get into some of his iterations of the washing machine in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. I'm talking with Tom Hoover. He's a retired school administrator and an amateur historian. He's written about a man who really was incredibly responsible for the success of Maytag Corporation in the new book, How We Made the Gyrofoam, the story of two Midwestern farm boys who changed wash day Mondays forever. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll find out what we've learned from the New Horizon probes pictures and information about Pluto this week. But right now, we're talking about washing machines. With me is Tom Hoover. He's just published a book called How We Made the Gyrofoam, the story of two Midwestern farm boys who changed wash day Mondays forever, inventive masterpiece of Howard Snyder. And just before the break, Tom, we were talking about how the Maytag company got into the washing machine business. And you were talking about how Elmer Maytag, one of the sons of the founders, said, you know, we need something to sell during the off season. Let's sell washing machines. And this was an incredibly competitive business right about then, right?
It was. There were literally over 100 or more washing machine manufacturers in the country. But the technology of the washing machine at that time was really quite crude. It was, as I mentioned earlier, literally nothing more than a mechanical washboard. The tub, of course, was made of wood. It was corrugated. It was hand-powered. And it had an agitator called a milking stool agitator because of its shape. It resembled a milking stool in the lid. And it didn't have a ringer. attached to it. And so for mom and her daughters, washing clothes on a wash day Monday literally took hours and hours at a time. Getting the clothes clean took a long time. Essentially, the cleaning principle was friction. The idea was that the clothes would rub up against each other, one another, in the tub, or they would be forced to the outside of the tub where they would rub up against the corrugated walls of the wash tub, and that's what would enable them to come clean. And it was a very difficult process. And Howard Snyder, I'm sure, watched his mom, his stepmother, his sisters and stepsisters washing clothes. F.L. would have seen that as well. They both came from very large families. And what I found really interesting in all of this is how over time the two of them decided, yes, we want to sell washing machines and we want our company to be profitable, but we want to make it a labor-saving, a time-saving piece of machinery
as well. So they really focused on making it easier to agitate the clothing. I mean,
right.
So Howard focused first on a flywheel.
He did. He came up with a vertical flywheel that enabled made it possible to crank that milking stool dolly much more easily, and it would continue to spin with fewer cranks. And it was advertised. The machine was called the Hired Girl washing machine. Came out in 1909. And the advertisement that accompanied it said, "So easy, a 10-year-old can do it."
I'm sure many 10-year-olds were thrilled.
That's right.
By yep. that.
And he also did something really ingenious. He attached a belt drive to that machine, which meant that a housewife could attach that machine to a generator or to a tractor and could power the milking stool agitator that way. It was a great idea, but what Howard Snyder and F.L. Maytag discovered was that housewives told them, "My husband won't let me use his tractor. My husband won't let me use his generator."
Plus, so, they were lugging these wash tubs all over the place, probably
right.
to be close to an engine. He also put a new kind of ringer.
He did.
On the wash tub.
He did. He attached a swinging ringer. And again, it was in keeping with this desire to make wash day Mondays easier for women, because literally he invented the gearing that would power the milking stool agitator and at the same time power the wringer. So the housewife or her daughters could be washing a load of clothes and at the same time could be wringing a load of clothes at the same time. So that was a real time saver.
Absolutely.
back in 1909, 1910.
All right. So then they were worried about, since the women couldn't always use the tractor or the generator, the next step was to give it some kind of motor
right.
that would give them independence, right?
That's correct. And so in 1911, Maytag introduced the power washer. It was the Model 41, it was called. And it had an electric motor attached to it. And the first electric motor, or washing machine with electric motor, was actually patented in Newton in 1909 by a man named O.W. Woodrow. And one of the, as I discovered, the genius of Howard Snyder was he could take other people's ideas and other people's inventions, and he could improve upon them. And that's what he did.
Right.
And
he seemed to be able to see the problems in different ways than other people could.
He could. That's exactly right. When I was researching Howard's life, I was struck by a comment of F.L. Maytag, who noted that he said Snyder had the unusual capacity for looking into the future and sizing up probable public demand, coming up with a saleable article before it was ever manufactured. And so he was a visionary. And in a way, he was kind of like, I remember a comment attributed to Steve Jobs, who was asked one time, you know, about handheld phones and some of those devices. How do we know people want these? And he said, well, they won't know that until we tell them they want it. Well, Snyder was kind of that way as well. He was a visionary. He was a great listener. He would listen to the salesmen who would go out into the field, and they would come back and explain to him complaints and problems, and then he would go to work on that. So yeah, he came up with a washing machine that had an electric motor, and of course, Maytag, being the businessman that he was, realized, well, we have a whole other segment out there,
an
untapped market, farm families. And so we need a washing machine with a motor, a gas-powered motor. And in 1914, along comes the multi-motor, the Model 44, which had a half horsepower gasoline motor attached to it.
All right, so this is pretty revolutionary and sells really well. But again, that kind of saturates the market. There are enough other people selling similar things that things really slow down. And in 1921, there was a real crisis at the company.
Right. The company had invested very heavily in manufacturing farm equipment for World War I because we were helping, our country was helping to feed the world, as it were. And so there was a heavy investment in expanding the company. And in 1919 and 1920, the Maytag Company, and again, it was Howard Snyder and others, figured out how to economically cast an aluminum wash tub to get away from the wooden wash tub. And this machine became known as the Model 70. And so the company expanded very quickly, expanded its foundry because they were going to mass produce this revolutionary new washing machine that had an aluminum wash tub. Well, post-war economics set in. There was a slump in farm demand for agricultural equipment, and the economy slowed down, and the Maytag Company is deeply in debt. So along comes Maytag's other son, Lewis B. Maytag, who was a graduate of Iowa State, and he was an engineer. And lo and behold, he is made president of the company in 1921. And he immediately looks at the company books. I'm sure he was having long discussions with his brother, Elmer, and realized our company is deeply in debt and we have to do something here. So he goes to Howard and says, Howard, you and your boys in the experimental department have got to invent a washing machine unlike any other, or this company may not survive. I need to keep the creditors away by promising them, stick with us. We're about to come up with something much different in terms of washing machines.
So there wasn't even a concept at that time. He said, I'm going to tell everybody that we are on the cusp of a tremendous breakthrough. You make that happen.
Right. So we think we have pressure in our job sometimes. Right. Think about that.
The entire company is riding on your shoulders.
Right.
Invent something new.
Exactly. Well, Snyder actually, as early as about 1914, had begun experimenting with an agitator at the bottom of the tub because he realized that washing clothes using friction was possibly not the most efficient way to do that. So he started tinkering with changing the dynamics of how clothes were washed. And in 1921, he invites L.B. Maytag to take a look at this machine that he and others in the experimental lab had invented, which became the famous Model 80 gyrofoam electric washing machine. And it had an aluminum tub. It was cone-shaped at the bottom, which meant that the dirt would fall to the bottom of the tub. The agitator, that he called a gyrotator, was fixed and attached to the bottom of the tub, and that totally changed how women began washing clothes. Now it wasn't friction that was causing clothes to come clean. It was the tumbling action that caused the clothes to tumble through hot, soapy water that would enable them to come clean. And that was a totally revolutionary new way of washing clothes, and it became known as the gyrofoam principle.
Talking with Tom Hoover. He's a retired school administrator and amateur historian. He's written about the invention of the gyrofoam and about the inventor, Howard Snyder, in his new book. And okay, so he comes up with this way to put an agitator on the bottom of the washing machine. It's an electric washing machine, which again, gives you a lot of independence. And by this time, electricity had spread a little bit farther.
Right.
So there's a market for that. But they also have to convince people that this is the future. And you have some wonderful ads in your book that describe the gyrofoam. I loved the language that they used and talked about how water is moving in a whole different way and describing the sound of the machine.
Right. Your eyes will tell you the clothes are coming clean. Your ears will tell you your clothes are coming clean. Just lift the lid and look in the tub and you'll see that it's true. And if you think about the history of the Maytag company into more modern times, the company was always known for its creative advertising. And it started way back with L.B. Maytag, who was an ad man. He loved coming up with all kinds of ingenious ads to sell their products. So the machine takes the market by storm. Within 14 months from the time it was introduced in 1921, within 14 months, the company is debt-free. So they had wiped off of the books about $1 million in debt. And if you put that in the context of today's money, of course, that's a very significant amount. And between 1921 and the end of 1926, the company sells $200 million worth of these machines. They very quickly got out of the farm implement manufacturing business, and they became solely a washing machine manufacturing company.